Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. It is 12:07, 7 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for joining us this Sunday, 404-872-0750. Lines are wide open, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. I just opened up my Twitter account, at Glink, at GLINK, and there are these pictures of me with Eric Estrada. Do you remember him from Chips? A very long story, but if you want to see these pictures, we were at a event. I was at an event, I think last year sometime, and you know, this has been a long year. It might have been earlier this year, and he was there, and as a joke, we had our picture taken with him, so it's very funny on my Twitter thing this morning. Oh, just dropped a pen. Okay, on to more interesting things. I spent last week with some really smart people at an annual conference that I go to. It's a very small conference. It's a bunch of us who get together and we sit on an advisory board for credibility.org. Credibility is the former Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta, and they changed their name last year. Maybe it's a couple of years ago. Who can remember? They changed their name because now they represent, you know, they own CCCSs in many parts of the country, and they need some sort of a larger scale branding, I think. But we get together, this is our fifth year in a row, and I'm sitting in a room with some of the top thinkers from different kinds of organizations, think tanks, big credit companies, big financial institutions, and we sit around and we talk about what's going on in the economy, and I always learn so much. Now, for those of you who are long-term listeners to the show, you know that in 2007, I went to my very first conference in October. And one of the guys who's there is an economist and works for the Ford Foundation. And we all went around the room. This is 2007, mind you. And we talked about what we thought about the economy. And I said, you know, I'm just starting to hear from a lot of people who can't pay their bills, who are upside down in their houses, or they just, the mortgages aren't right, and there were all these pay option arms, and now they are resetting and they just can't make these payments and they're worried about their jobs. And I really think we're in trouble. And he said, well, he said, compared to how I feel, you sound like a total optimist. And he went through and he laid out exactly what has happened over the last 4 years. I will never forget it. He was the only person that I had met who has nailed what happened. All of it, top to bottom. So I was very excited to see him because every year we, you know, have this meeting and I get to hear his really interesting perspectives. And it was interesting just how negative all of us still feel about the economy and how we really don't feel that it's getting better. So we did a little exercise that I want to tell you about where we went around the table and we said, the moderator said, well, how many months do you think it will be until we return to normal? So everybody said, well, what's normal? Normal is under 8% unemployment. Normal is where nationally home prices are growing again at about 3% a year, which is the historical average. Now, that is happening, definitely not in Atlanta. There are some markets where that is already happening, but it's definitely not happening nationwide. And there are places like Atlanta, Chicago, the entire state of Michigan, South Florida, parts of California, Las Vegas, a few other places, Phoenix, where prices are still dropping. And dropping to a very significant degree. In fact, some new numbers that came out this week were talking about how home equity, so homeowners' equity in their homes is down 55% from the peak in 2006 to $6.2 trillion. And it is hurtling towards the record lows of what this one report called Armageddon 2009. So hardly something to make you feel happy. So we go around the room. And a whole bunch of people think it would be 48 months or 4 years until we reach this, you know, definition of normal. 4 years. Think about that. That would be 2015. Then we get to this economist, and he says 120 months. That wasn't even an option on the board. He's like, I want a new option, 120 months. 10 years. That takes us to 2021, right? I sort of split the difference. I think we're quite a bit further from that kind of normal, and I thought somewhere around the edge of like 72 to 96 months. And the reason I feel that way, it's not that parts of the economy aren't growing. It's just that there are so many global pressures right now that I think we hear a lot about Greece, and then we hear some things about Italy, but the total picture is really something. In my blog this morning on the radio show notes, I called it, "Are you looking for a job? According to a new survey, so is the rest of the world." So last week, we saw on Thursday, the unemployment claims number fell below 400,000 for the fourth week in a row. And it seems like good news, right? The ranks of the unemployment, those people receiving unemployment benefits, also declined to a three-year low. But the U6, which is that broad measure of unemployment, it's the underemployed and the people who have thrown up their hands and quit looking for work and all that, that remains near 17%. The reason unemployment, the ranks of people who are on benefits, is dwindling is that benefits are running out and states don't have the money to put them in. And so one of the things that I worry about all the time is the effect of bankrupt states, of which we discussed in our meeting, there are several hundred counties that probably would file for bankruptcy protection if they could. Not all of them can. Some states require that you go into a conservatorship, kind of like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, right? So they're not really bankrupt, but they're totally bankrupt. And why they trade on the stock exchange, I have no idea. They owe so much money to the government, they can never pay it back. Right now they owe almost $200 billion. And don't even get me started on the $13 million in bonuses that was paid out, you know, because they can't get anybody to take the jobs at the standard government pay. So it's okay for the president of the United States to earn $400,000, but we can't get anybody to head up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac for less than $2 million. Please. Or we can't get anybody good. Or we can't get anybody who knows anything. Really. Don't, like I said, don't get me started. Anyway, so we were going around the table, and people were pretty pessimistic. Nobody thought it would be, all this stuff would get fixed in less than 4 years. And then we had, and the outlier was the 10-year thing, and most of the other people were in between. And when you look at sort of this worldwide phenomenon of joblessness, you start to understand why we could be in so much more trouble here. And it doesn't, it's this worldwide cascading effect, right? So, for example, according to the International Labor Organization, the world has to add 80 million jobs. 80 million jobs over 2012 and 2013 just to get back to where global employment was in 2007. So let's just let that sink in a moment. 80 million jobs over 2012 and 2013, just to get back to where employment was. And in the developed world, the first world, we need to generate 27.2, and I don't even think this includes the U.S., 27.2 million jobs just to get back to where they were. That is a lot of work that's not being done. And so one of the things that people are looking at around the world are the ideas of global unemployment as a crisis that's brewing with profound implications, not only for the stock market, but for possible outbreaks of civil unrest. Look what's going on in Greece. Look what's starting to happen in Italy. I mean, these are places that we visit, and it's fine. It's not like we have, you know, the drug kingpins going around shooting everybody. That's not what's happening here. People are hungry, and they feel as though their government has forsaken them. They have a lot of unscripted time on their hands, and they feel like they're not being treated fairly. And that is really powerful stuff. And so you kind of look at what's going on, and you think, how is that going to affect us in the United States? And you start to realize that all of our biggest companies, the S&P 500 that we talk about all the time, all of these companies have international investments. They do work abroad. A lot of their profits come from abroad. But beyond that, if 80 million people don't have jobs, that's 80 million people who and their families that aren't buying stuff from us, and they don't have jobs because we're not buying stuff from them. And I'm not by any means suggesting that the answer is we have to go start shopping. That was what happened after September 11th. Do you remember? Everybody's like, go shop, America. We had a rare moment in time to do something big, and all we did was go out and run up a lot of credit card debt. This is a different place. This is a really interesting and a little bit scary time. And we look out and people are starting to wonder, how are we going to get this this country and this world back on track? Because guess what? The International Labor Organization only thinks that we might create a fraction of these jobs, maybe just 10%. Just 10%. So instead of creating 27 million jobs, we might only create 2.5 million jobs. It's a really interesting concept when you start to get beyond where you are. For people who are unemployed and desperately looking for a job, you start to connect with people all over the world. And you start to realize that other people feel exactly the way you do, right? Because humanity is humanity. For people in power, you know, like the super committee, they can't seem to figure out a way to do their jobs and make a decision and let's just get moving forward. You got to reach across the aisle. This is not a time to sit in your corner and say, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. I think you got to be the grown-up somebody. Somebody's got to be a grown-up. Somebody's got to step up and say, let's make some tough choices. None of us are going to be happy with everything we get, but taking your ball and going home just isn't an option. We are hired and voted in to do more, and that's what I'd really like to see. I am very scared by the idea that everybody's going to take their ball and go home. That, to me, is what sets you on a path for 10 years. 10 years. Until we get back to normal, and not two or three. 404-872-0750. I'm going to open up the phone lines. They're wide open, folks, if you want to comment on this or ask a question about your money. Happy to do it. Kimberly joins us on the line. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's on your mind?
My husband bought a house about 4 years ago, and he was making more than what the house payment was. He did not know that. Well, instead of them putting it towards the principal, they opened up a savings account in his name without telling him and started putting the money in that. So by doing that, we were late on payments because we didn't know, and it ended up putting us where we're upside down on the house, and we are facing foreclosure or short sale.
Okay, I don't understand what has happened to you. Did you send in a payment every month?
Yes, ma'am. We went to the bank every month to pay, and we got the slips and everything. But what we didn't know is that we were paying extra, so they weren't putting it towards the mortgage. They were putting it in a savings account.
Did they put the whole payment in his savings account and not the payment towards the mortgage and then the extra in the savings account?
They put all of it towards the mortgage at first, and then they took everything out of where we paid for the mortgage and put it into a savings account.
And when did you discover that?
It went on for about 3 to 6 months.
Why didn't you know that sooner?
Because we were getting the paper saying that we were paying our mortgage, and they never told us that we had it in an account.
I'm sorry, so they just sort of set up an account. So where's all the money that was in the account?
We got that back, and we put it towards the payments and all, but it kept putting us late. So we had all those late payments and stuff like that. And we keep getting papers in the mail talking about other people have had this done to them to sign it where they can start a lawsuit against Bank of America.
Is it Bank of America that you've had the problem with?
Yes, ma'am.
And what have you done to get to the higher-ups at Bank of America to unravel this?
We have been dealing with this for 3 years now. We have to call and talk to somebody. They change out the people every so many months. So all the paperwork that we fill out to get everything remodified.
Okay. Kimberly,
okay.
I've heard this story thousands of times, not just about Bank of America. All of the banks have behaved badly. I am completely confused about why this was done to you. But let's see if we can get it stopped. What you need to do now, do you have a paper and pen?
Yes, ma'am.
Have you filed a complaint with the OCC that regulates Bank of America at their website, helpwithmybank.gov?
No, I haven't.
You need to do that today. Helpwithmybank.gov. Right at the very top, we are going to be foreclosed. And then write a description. Keep out the emotion, right? They just need to see the dates, what happened, what they did to you, and put it in there. And then what I want you to do is you will get a file number, like a case number.
Okay.
And I want you to send that case number to me with your complete contact information, and I will make sure that somebody pretty high up at the OCC sees it. And they will make sure that somebody who actually has something that they can do with Bank of America will see it.
Okay.
And let's see if we can help you save your house. And I've made this offer before. The OCC's website, helpwithmybank.gov. You have to send me your complete contact information. Go to my website at thinkglink.com. Get my email address, and I will see what I can do for you. This is not a promise that I can solve everything. I wish I had a magic wand, and I could solve it for everybody. But I can try to cut through some red tape for you, and I'm more than happy to do it. It's 22 minutes past the hour. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of the Elise Kling Show next on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Kling is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Such a feeling's coming over me.
28 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Kling. You're listening to the Elise Kling Show. Lines are wide open, 404-872-0750. Do we have a global job crisis going on? What about our own job crisis? There's so many crazy things happening. When we come back, we're going to do the numbers. We're going to talk about the stock market this week, which is, a very up-and-down proposition these days, and some other insights from this conference that I was at. And, of course, we're taking your questions, 404-872-0750. It's Thanksgiving week, and that means I'm going to be filling in for Clark Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're going to do our traditional Thanksgiving celebration. I'll be giving my turkey recipe out coming up. It's already online. And we'll be talking about Black Friday and the deals that may or may not be out there this year. In fact, by the time we get on the air, I think it'll all be sold out. So we'll talk about it on Wednesday as well. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
I'd find a way.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show. 37 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We saw the Dow down quite a lot this week, 357 points. The Dow Global Index was down, and mortgage interest rates were down below 4% for a 30-year fixed-rate loan for, I believe, the third or fourth year in a row. Just to go back, it's interesting. Barron's ran down the numbers with the NBA lockout and several player suits against the leagues. Here's some of the information about what that's actually costing the industry. 400 are the estimated number of jobs lost as of October 25th. Kobe Bryant is down $1.9 million. That's 2 weeks' pay for him. $500 million is the potential loss of basketball shoe sales. I guess people aren't buying shoes. Why wouldn't they be buying shoes? Seems like they would. $55 million is the estimated loss of Indianapolis tax revenues from, I guess, not having basketball games. And $1.25 billion is the potential combined ad revenue loss to Disney and Time Warner simply because they are not having a basketball season. It's kind of crazy. 38 minutes past the hour, Rodney joins us on the line from Hurtwell. Hi, Rodney. Welcome to the Elise Kling Show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can I help you today?
Well, I don't know if it's a unique situation. I will be 65 years old in December, and I have sold my business. And my problem is I've been fairly successful all these years being in business, and I have put money away, and now I'm worried about, of course, the stock market. I've put a small portion in two different funds, and I don't know if I can name those or not, but I have two different funds, and then I put the other monies that my wife and I have made all these years into conservative CDs and money markets since the market started getting so such a variable.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to my brokers, and they say, well, you know, you got to be into the stock market for the long term. But at 65, I'm a little bit concerned about the long term.
Are you healthy?
Oh, yeah.
Is your wife healthy?
Yes.
The two of you can expect to live somewhere between 8 to 85, 82 to, you know, 90 even. So if you're 65 and you might live to be 80 or 85, that's 15 to 20 years. That's pretty much the long term.
All right. So that is considered, at my age and our health being in the condition that we're in. So I still look at what I have in the market as being a long-term investment.
I think so. But it doesn't mean that you want everything to be in the stock market. I mean, you probably should have no more than maybe 30 or 40% in the stock market, right? And then
I have really less than that in the stock market. I have about maybe 18 to 20% in the stock market, and the remaining cash is in CDs and money market accounts.
Well, I'd really love to see you have a little exposure to some bonds. And it, maybe there's a way to buy into a total bond fund where you're getting some exposure to high-yield bonds, corporate bonds, municipal bonds, regular bonds, boring bonds, yellow bonds, whatever.
Right.
All in the same thing. So you're getting a very diversified portfolio of bonds. So if the bond market blows up, you know, that it's the total bond fund, which is why you go with an index fund, because it's just what it's trying to do is mimic the market, right?
Right.
So I would have a chunk of your money in a total bond fund and a chunk of your money in some sort of a total index stock market fund, and then some of your money in global stocks, in a global fund. It's
right.
The easiest. It's, yeah, and so that's the easiest way to diversify.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need a broker's advice for it. You don't need to pay big money for this. Right? Because these,
yeah,
you can do index funds with Vanguard and get exactly the same reaction.
Right. Now, we're very fortunate. We owe for nothing. We're totally debt-free, but we have three homes. And those are basically, along with normal insurance and everything, are the only expenses that we have. I worry about the market, as you have just been talking about, being down so bad in property, as having to hold this property for maybe 4 to 6 years before, you know, I can really turn a profit on it.
It may be a lot longer. If I told you it was going to be 20 years till you could turn a profit, what would that change for you?
Well, I would take a loss on it because at 20 years, I'd be 85, and I really...
Okay.
You know,
so we've established that you would move today if you thought it might be 20 years before those properties turn profit. We've established that, right?
I would sell those profits, most likely. I mean, those properties.
Are they mortgaged or they're cash?
Oh, no, they're paid for.
Okay,
no.
So now let's talk about the cost of carrying those paid-off properties.
Mm-hmm.
How much is that costing you every year?
Well, just taxes and insurance, and I'm still very healthy, so I do all the maintenance as far as grass cutting and that sort of stuff. So, you know, utilities and insurance and property taxes.
And are these all in Atlanta?
No, one's in Key West, one's in Rutledge, Georgia, and one is on Lake Hartwell.
So how do you mow the grass in Florida?
You don't.
it just grows wild.
Well, it doesn't grow very much. We just have the vegetation, and I pay somebody $35 a month to take care of it. So.
The reason I say this is that there are costs to owning property. You have taxes, you have insurance. There's no maintenance now, but you may have to put in some maintenance down the line. If the properties aren't being used, or if one of them is used less than the others, you should sell them. If you're using them and your children are using them and they're going to use them, then you should figure out a way to get them out of your estate.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set up a trust where these properties go in the trust and they transfer in chunks over to your kids over, I think it's 14 years.
Right.
And they get out of your estate entirely. So you have to decide sort of long-term what you're going to do. But I would say to you, you should plan on those properties not appreciating much in value, and then think about what you are paying for property taxes and insurance, and then think about the total cost, what you could get out of it, and how you might invest that money going forward elsewhere where it may be more profitable.
Right, yeah. Yes, I can understand that, because the properties that we have bought were in several years back in the 2000s, and at a very good rate, and I remodeled them myself. So, you know, I still could make money on them, but I certainly couldn't make the money that I could have made in 2000.
But you may never make that money again. And one of the things we talked about in this conference I was at is how it could really take 15 years to 20 years for properties to really start seeing any sort of real appreciation. And let's say it takes 7 years for properties nationwide to start appreciating at 3% a year. How many years of 3% average annual appreciation will it take for those properties to be at some place that you would consider to be of interest? And you really just have to kind of take yourself out of it, and the emotion that you've obviously poured into these houses, and along with your fixer-up skills, which apparently are considerable, so good for you, Rodney. But you want to take yourself out of it and just kind of say, on a numbers basis, where does this start to make sense? And how do you start, how do you think about this in a way where these aren't real properties and these aren't homes, these are just investments? Or this is where I'm spending money, and could I be spending money in a different place doing other things? And I think if you think about it, the answer is probably, you know, if you're not using these houses regularly and you don't enjoy them as much anymore, it's maybe time to let them go and just flip it around, because there's other places to put your money which require a lot less work. And right now you're doing all that work. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I'm concerned about the reporting on the accounting standards now, especially with most of the profits of corporations coming from Europe, because I don't think anybody's monitoring that profit system, whereas they can fake the numbers and put money over there. And then say, we made this amount of money, and there's nothing there.
I absolutely agree with you. I think the GAAP accounting standards that are used in this country allow for all sorts of loopholes. And I think industries have sprung up to figure out ways of not actually fully reporting things.
Well, remember, they went to pro forma. And under that system, if you made, like, especially in technology, if you made 17 sales calls a week, and you were closing 2% or 3%, you could use that as profit.
Yeah.
And if the sale fell through, who took it off the books? Nobody.
They yep.
counted. So, you know, that's where we're at now.
I completely agree. I know that there's a push by, I believe it's the Republicans, to have a tax-free, make the United States a tax-free haven, or rather eliminate any penalties for corporations returning profits
right.
to the U.S. from abroad, because supposedly that's going to do something for us. But you know,
that would give us about $13 trillion.
Yeah, they have a lot of money now. They're not, the corporations aren't doing anything with it, particularly.
I know.
So it gives us $13 trillion more dollars to do what? To put in our banks.
To probably tax and take from corporations. I mean, once they get back, they're in the trap.
Yes. So I don't see that happening. Now, I'm not an accounting whiz. We had our accountants on last week, our enrolled agents who know all the tax stuff. But I think you're probably on to something. I mean, again, there's a lot of money that's being made abroad. Walmart, what did they just report? They reported their global revenue rose 8% to $110 billion.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is international.
Well, you look at GE. I mean, GE supposedly sold Boone Pickens $123 million worth of windmills, and he hadn't even paid for those yet. And here he is up pushing natural gas from wind turbines.
I think your point's well made. I think there's a lot of questions in what's actually happening, and I think we have to keep our eye on it, and I hope... really hope somebody is. I don't know that they are. 48 minutes past the hour. Jeff, thanks for your call. 404-872-0750. Jeff joins us on the line from Lilburn. Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
How are you? What's on your mind today?
I'm trying to refinance. The numbers are right, but I can't seem to get the brokers and lenders to give me any information so I can shop.
Okay, so what are you looking for that they're not telling you?
Well, what the closing costs are going to be. What their points are going to be.
Yeah. What do they say when you ask them that?
Well, they give me like, you know, $3,000 or $4,000, $2,000 or $3,000, you know, and it's just, and then they want me to fill out a loan application and go through all, give them all of the information just so they can give me a good, you know, a good quote on a rate.
Okay.
Is that what I have to do?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get super specific, you're eventually going to have to fill out an application. Now, what you don't want is to fill out an application and then let a couple of months go by without acting on it. Because if you fill out, let's say, five applications around town, and those all get reported as pulls on your credit, and then you don't actually do something, and it continues for like 6 months, it looks bad on your credit history.
Right.
So you may have to fill out applications and get all that kind of stuff organized, and you know, and unfortunately, you know, do that in order to get more detailed information. So the reason the companies are sort of reticent to tell you exactly what your costs are going to be is that there's a new law that requires them to be exact. And if they're not exact, right, they can get into a lot of trouble and there are penalties. And so that's why they probably aren't being as specific as you would like them to be.
Okay.
But what you can do is go in there with a copy of a current credit history, credit score, and say, you know, assume this is the story. Let's discuss what some of these typical costs would be. And they should be able to give you a little bit more of a specific. But they may not think that you have enough equity in your property to be worthwhile, and that may be the reason they don't want to do it. 51 minutes past the hour. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to have a prize pack to give away, so stay tuned for that. And your questions, lines are wide open again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. Marie joins us on the line from Dalton. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I would like to know how I would go about leaving property to children without waiting till my husband and I pass and they inherit it. How would I go about getting it into their hands now?
Well, do you want it in today?
No, not necessarily today, but maybe, you know, maybe within a year or two, I would like for them to, it to be maybe finalized.
Okay, and what kind of property is it and how much is it worth and does it have any, has it, how much is it worth? How much money are we talking about and how many kids?
Oh, two kids and just property values have, you know, really plummeted, but I'm guessing maybe around $300,000, $400,000. It has a farmhouse, barns.
Is this like a vacation house?
No, it's my husband and my principal residence.
And why do you want them to have it now? Are you not going to live there?
Well, we're thinking about building us a smaller house. The house is large. All the children are grown and married, and it would just be nice to leave it to them and let them be enjoying it while they have, you know, children and, you know.
So would it be, okay, so would it be a, would one of the two families move in as a primary residence, or this would be a vacation house for them?
No, it would be primary, and the
but
other...
But for not for both children?
No, well, I would like to leave it to two children. One would get this land, and the other one a house.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you just can't, you know, you can't expect two families to move into one house or at least
you can't, but I think you're setting yourself up for some problems with this.
Okay.
Because if you want to build a smaller house and you want to give the children, you want to divide it so that one gets land and one gets the house,
mm-hmm.
Is it the same property or you have other land that'll be separate from this?
It's the same property, but it's a farm, and the land would be divided. One already has a house at
Okay. Marie, we're coming up to a commercial break. Why don't you hang on, and we'll talk a little bit more about this when we come back, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Stay
tuned. It's 58 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We have a whole other hour coming up. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
I fell in love with you.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
7 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 12 to 2. Although a couple more weeks and we're going to be moving all the way back to 11 to 1. Football will be over. 404-872-0750. My website, Think. Glink.com, THINKGLINK.com. My company helped publish a new book this week. It's a novel, and it's called Oxford Messed Up. You can find it at Amazon.com, and it comes in all the electronic versions. I'm very proud of it. I actually even wrote a review of it, and it's climbing the charts at Amazon. It's very exciting, and if you're looking for a good holiday gift, paperback is like $14.95, plus you get a little discount from Amazon. So I'm just mentioning it. I'm very, very proud of this book, Oxford Messed Up. It's actually a book I haven't written, but it's a novel, but we did help publish it for somebody, and I just feel very proud of it. 8 minutes past the hour, we were talking with Marie from Dalton about her farmhouse and property that she wants to leave to her children, but she wants to give it now and not wait until after she and her husband are gone. So, Marie, let's just recap a minute. You think the house and the farm is probably worth $300,000 to $400,000, and you want to build a smaller house nearby or on different land you own?
Probably nearby.
And you want to divide this house and land so that one of your kids gets the house and one just gets land?
Well, one already has a house that's adjacent to the land, so she does not need a house.
Okay. All right, so then she would have land, and then the other person would have the house. Now, how are you going to get around the difference in value between the land and house and just land?
Well, we thought maybe about giving one more land while to make up for the difference.
Okay, and how much did you pay for this property whenever you bought it?
Oh, my goodness, it's been many, many years ago, back when property was selling for $30, $40 an acre.
Okay, so is it safe to say you paid less than $10,000 for the land?
Absolutely.
And then you built a house on it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there was cost to the building of the house,
mm-hmm.
and you bought the land. Did you acquire more land?
No.
Okay. So what I'm trying to get at is that if you want to give this property now to your children, you probably want to establish the value. And then you're going to have to work to rezone the land, or at least subdivide it, so that you can give land separately from the house. And you'll have to establish a value. Now, for simplicity, let's just say the land is worth $300,000, and when you divide it up, one's going to get $150,000, and one's going to get $150,000. It's going to be the house and smaller piece of land, and then the other person's going to get the bigger land.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough, just because it's too hard otherwise to calculate.
Okay.
Now, you and your husband can give each child, spouse, and actually anybody else, I think it's $13,000 per year. Okay? So if the value of the gift is $150,000 each, and then you have to subtract the land, the cost of the land, and the building of the house. So let's say it's $100,000 each. You can see that if you and your husband can give $26,000 per year to each child and their spouse, in 4 years they're going to be giving them all of this outright.
Okay.
So I think what you want to do is talk to an estate attorney about drawing what your options are. You can also do this with a trust. If you don't want to give it to both children or both spouses of the children and you just want to give it to the children, there are lots of different options available to you, but you need to talk to an estate attorney, get the right papers drawn up, because what you don't want to have happen is you don't want the IRS to come back and say, nope, this was a gift and we're going to subtract it from how much you can leave them when you die. And you may decide it's in the best interest to actually not just give the house, but sell it to them.
Now, how would I go about doing that?
Well, you'd establish a price for the house, let's say $100,000. And you would set up some sort of payment at, 4% or 3%. Interest rates are very low right now. And then they would buy the house. Hold on. They would buy the house. You would have a loan agreement with them. And when you die, you can forgive the loan.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of different ways to handle this. And you and your husband are going to have to meet with an attorney and figure out exactly what you want to do.
So we couldn't sell it to them for undervalue of its true value?
Well, you can sell it for a reasonable amount, but if it's too low, the IRS could come back and say that was really a gift, not a sale.
I see.
So you can't sell it to them for like a buck.
Yeah.
But you can give them a gift of $26,000 this side of the year and a gift of $26,000 next side of the year. And if the value is actually only $100,000 after you subtract what your, cost to buy the land and the house, right? So the profit, so to speak, is that $100,000 and you're giving them $52,000, maybe they only need a loan for $50,000 that you're going to give them at a very low interest rate. And over the next couple of years, you can forgive more of the debt if you really want to. That's why you have to talk to some. There are so many different ways that you can handle this. You just want to make sure it's done legally and buttoned up with the right paperwork so nobody can ever come back to you and say, this is actually more of this, and it's going to cost you this in penalties.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Marie. Thanks so much for calling the show. Happy Thanksgiving. 13 minutes past the hour. I'm going to be giving my turkey recipe away a little bit later on the show. Stay tuned for that. If you're desperate to go buy a turkey and stuff today, then go online to thinkglink.com and in the search engine put in turkey recipe, and it'll pop right up. 404-872-0750. Chris joins us on the line from Murrayville. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Me and my fiance was in a car accident last year.
Ooh, and, you guys okay?
I still have some problems, but she's doing a lot better.
That's great.
We got a large chunk of change from the lawsuit, and we're trying to decide on how to spend said chunk of change.
Okay. What do you want to spend it on?
Well, we know we want to buy a piece of foreclosed property.
Okay.
And we've already been researching that. Our main concern is the bank we're with now has some unsavory practices.
Many banks do. When you say unsavory, are they about to be shut down?
I'm not really sure. I do know that they've been in the limelight the past couple of weeks for several things that they shouldn't have been doing.
Okay.
And since this was brought to my attention, we're wanting to switch banks before the check clears escrow. Right now it's in escrow with the lawyer, and it'll probably be another 2 weeks before we actually get it. So we're trying to decide on what bank would best suit us.
Okay.
We're basically a low-income family.
How much money did you get in the car crash?
Before bills and everything, the total suit was for $37,000, I think, is what we got off of it.
Okay, and is that after paying the attorney?
No.
Okay, so they're going to take, what, a third?
35%.
Okay.
It was pro bono.
Well, it's not pro bono if they're taking 35%. It was a contingency agreement.
Oh, okay.
Meaning that they were going to take, basically roughly a little more than a third of anything they got. But if they didn't get anything, you wouldn't owe them anything.
Okay.
That's the contingency agreement. So you're going to walk away with roughly $25,000.
Yeah.
Okay. And how much money do you and your girlfriend earn in a year?
Oh, Lord. Probably around $8,000 together.
That's it. Okay. So this is a significant amount of money for you.
Yes.
And you want to buy a foreclosure with it?
What we're looking to do is I want to buy a foreclosure and outfit the house as a green home and feed back into the grid so we have a monthly income.
Okay. Couple of items. One is setting up your house as a greenhouse is a pretty expensive proposition. It could. Have you looked into the cost of putting in solar panels, for example?
For a 14,000 square foot home, we're looking at about approximately.
You mean 1,400 square foot, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're looking at approximately around. Let's see. I think panels. We're looking at around 10,000.
Okay, and that leaves you only $15,000 to buy a foreclosure.
Yes.
Okay, have you seen foreclosures for $15,000? Because I don't think there are a whole lot out there.
Actually, we found some the other day online for around $1,000 up to $6,000.
Okay, are they in neighborhoods you want to be in?
One or two of them were.
Okay. Okay, so if you can make this work, more power to you. You're not going to qualify for a loan, so
yeah.
You're going to have to pay cash.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have, you know, other expenses associated with it. I think it's really ambitious. I just warn you that you're not leaving yourself any money just in case the house doesn't have any plumbing or appliances. A lot of these foreclosures that are priced at $6,000 have no appliances or mechanical systems. They've all been stripped.
Well, I've done this before. I've bought foreclosure before.
Okay. All right. I don't know what
yeah.
your past is. I'm just saying you're not leaving yourself very much room. But if you can make this work, Chris, more power to you. Please call back the show and let us know how it goes.
Okay, will do.
All right. Now, to your question about what to do with the bank,
mm-hmm.
I think if you don't like the bank you're in, you should switch. And typically, I would be very careful. I'd want to, you know, go with an FDIC bank. Use a company that has lots of, if you use an ATM, make sure they've got branches or ATMs nearby
mm-hmm.
so you can get access to your money. Try to negotiate your way out of a bunch of fees. Usually credit unions are a good place for this.
Okay.
And that's my best advice on getting a bank.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Good luck. I hope it works out. 19 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You know, I've written several blog posts about what you can buy for like $5,000 or less around the country, and there are some really nice-looking homes that, for whatever reason, end up going for just a few thousand dollars. I personally don't know of any right now, but Chris has obviously found some. The place to look, or I should say one place to look, would be on the HUD Home Store, HUDHomeStore.com. This is the place where HUD is putting all of their foreclosures, right? FHA foreclosures or HUD homes. And you would find a lot of different kinds of homes for sale. And maybe this is going to be a place to find good things. So HUDHomeStore.com. You can check it out by state. You can look by price. There's all kinds of ways to do it. It's 20 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We have a prize pack to give away, and we're going to answer more of your questions coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elyse Glenk on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
This song, 25 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We're going to give our prize pack away right now. The value, $357. It includes a pair of tickets to see Tony Bennett in concert November 25th at the Fox Theater. A $50 gift certificate to the 57 Fighter Group restaurant. A four-pack of tickets to see the Trans-Siberian Orchestra on December 2nd at Phillips Arena, produced by Live Nation. And, this is very helpful this week, a Kroger $50 gift card. That is the typical price of a Thanksgiving dinner for 10 people, just about $50. So, this is a fabulous prize pack. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller. Be nice to Fred. He is going to pick up the phone at 404-741-0750. Good luck. All right. 25 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can take a quick call. Fred joins us on the line. Hi, Fred.
At least did I just win a prize.
No, I'm sorry. You didn't. You have to call the prize line. You've called the regular line.
Sorry, Mom.
But I will answer your question for you.
At least I've spoken with you a couple of times before, and you are my hero.
Wow, thank you.
And you always give me good advice, but I'm trying to get through life with a low IQ, and I'm still trying to get my arms around one thing you told me, and I wish you'd give me a little clarification and answer one other question. The other question would be, I'm selling my house. I'm going to downsize. I'm 78 years old.
Okay.
Is there any advantage, just using hypothetical numbers, these aren't the right numbers, to protect the identity of the innocent, but if I paid $100,000 for my house and I sell it for $1 million, would I be better off to sell it and take all of the $1 million this year, or half this year and half next year, and so forth and so on?
You can't do that. When you sell the house, you just get to take, that's the sales date. So I don't, the only way that you would be able to spread it out is if you were doing some sort of an installment sale.
Yeah.
But you're not going to do that.
No. Okay, well, because I'm, you know, the
but you, well, think about that for a minute, because it's your house. Are you married?
You can tell I'm too happy to be married.
Now, I'm very happy with Sam. We're almost at 25 years. Come
on. Well, some people are just lucky.
All right. Well, listen, you get $250,000 of that tax-free. Okay, plus the costs of the, you know, you got to establish the basis, but so it's $100,000 purchase plus the cost of sale and the cost of marketing, any capital improvements you've made. So at the very bare minimum, you're at $350,000 and probably $400,000. The rest of it goes at long-term capital gains rates, which are very, very low. So you don't have to worry about taking it as income. So that's just how you're going to do it. 27 minutes past the hour, little Barry Manilow, my childhood sweetheart dreamboat. Hope you're enjoying that. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at ThinkBlink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
They're going to drop it on all the music they play on the bandstand.
36 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. So I'm going to be filling in for Clark this week. It's Thanksgiving, and that means Tuesday, Wednesday, day before Thanksgiving, and Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And back by popular demand, here is my turkey recipe for those of you who write in every week. We put it in this week's newsletter. If you're not signed up for the ThinkLink free weekly newsletter, you might want to be, because then you get things like Thanksgiving turkey recipes. But the secret to my delicious turkey is the margarine, olive oil, you could use butter, and herb mash that I make, and I spread all over the bird and inside, under the skin. And so it makes it really crispy and really delicious, and it self-bastes throughout the whole day of cooking. So 2 to 3 sticks of margarine plus olive oil to loosen it up, piles of fresh herbs, sage, rosemary, thyme, oregano, chives, whatever looks good, parsley, it's all delicious. 6 to 8 garlic cloves peeled, seasoned salt, pepper, 2 to 3 lemons cut in half, juice the lemons, add that in. And then I have this mash and I spread it all over the bird and I let it sit there for about a half an hour until I put it into the oven. Now, I also need turkey stock, and last year my innovation was to buy boxed turkey stock, low sodium if you can find it, and into that I put the giblets and the neck, and I think I bought an extra couple of wings or legs, and I just sort of recooked the stock with some herbs, and then orange juice. And so I spread all that stuff on, I put the bird, fill it with the lemons that have been cut up. And you can even put some more fresh herbs, just stuff big sprigs of fresh herbs. Turn the bird upside down, roast covered at 375 for the first 2 hours. This depends how big your bird is. I go with a 25-pound bird because I've got like 25 people coming for dinner. Flip the bird, take off the tin foil, and continue to roast at 350 until it's done. And I baste every half hour with turkey stock mixed with orange juice, plus whatever else is in the pan. And when I'm done, I deglaze, I take the bird out, and I cover it, and I just let it rest. and I deglaze the pan with white wine, and I dump all the liquid, scraping up the brown bits, into a big pot. I defat the liquid. I add a ton of mushrooms. I like a mix of wild and ordinary. And when this boils all the way down, it gets really concentrated. That's what I use as mushroom gravy. I like a thin gravy. I don't like to make a roux where you mix the flour with the butter and you cook it and then you add it in to thicken it. I don't like a thick gravy. I like a really thin, concentrated flavor. And that's what I do. And I do not cook the stuffing inside the bird. So what I do to make it taste like it got cooked inside the bird is I use the turkey stock when I make the stuffing on the stove, and then I bake it separately. And if you really want to serve a stuffed bird, after the bird is cooked, take all the lemons out of the cavity. It'll stay big because you've got the lemons in there. And you can stick the stuffing right back into the bird already cooked. And it'll be like, oh, here's your stuffing. You stuffed the bird. It looks great. Nobody ever has to know. So that is my recipe for the world's best turkey, and it's online at thinkglink.com, my website. All you have to do is go to the website and type turkey into the search engine and go down a little bit, and it'll pop up. So another helping of turkey. I will give this recipe again out this week on Tuesday when I start filling in for Clark. And if you have any questions, I'm always happy to help. 40 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Thanksgiving week, one of my very favorite times. 404-872-0750. There's so much to be thankful for. Mike joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Elise?
I'm great. How are you?
Fine. I got a question. I've had car troubles here lately. I spent a lot of money. I've got an old car, $260,000 on it.
Mm.
And I've kept pouring money into it and thinking I was going to be able to get it going again. And anyway, the motor's gone on it. So now what happened is I got behind on my mortgage. I've never been late before. So I was late, wasn't able to pay the mortgage because I spent so much money on my vehicle.
Yep.
I've got about $100,000 in my 401k. I wanted to try to take about $5,000 out and try to go find another vehicle. I need transportation.
Yep.
I tried to get a loan. They would not give me a loan for another vehicle because I was late on my mortgage. And I can't get caught up on that, and it's going to take me about a month or so, you know, in order to get everything caught back up. So my 401k, when I called them, they said they could not give me any money regardless of whether. I said, I just want to pay the penalty, pay the taxes. I need money. I need transportation.
Do you still work for the company?
Oh, yeah.
Can you borrow from the 401k instead?
I guess I could, but
I'd much rather you try and. Okay, so here's what happens: if you want to take out $5,000, you'll need to take out $10,000 to get $5,000.
Okay.
If you borrow, you could borrow $5,000. How much would it cost you to get totally caught up on your loan?
On my mortgage.
On your mortgage.
About $2,000, but it's just going to take, you know, about three or four paychecks before everything will be back to normal.
Yeah, here's what I'd rather you do. I'd rather you go borrow $7,000 from your 401k.
Borrow, okay.
Just borrow it. Borrowing from a 401k is last resort, but taking money out of a 401k is really last resort.
Right.
Because you have to pay.
They said I couldn't even do it,
okay.
Regardless.
Fine, perfect. So, great. So let's try borrowing $7,000.
Okay.
Take $2,000 and completely get caught up with your mortgage.
Okay.
You got to get that fixed. I don't want you to wait for paychecks.
Right. Okay.
Over the paychecks, just pay yourself back the $2,000.
Okay.
Then take the $5,000 that's left and go buy yourself a car.
Okay.
And then use your paychecks to pay yourself back as quickly as you can.
Okay.
With the company. But this is a way to get yourself sorted out.
Okay.
And not have to pay the penalty and the taxes, which is just seriously like taking $100 bills and lighting them on fire.
Right. Okay.
I don't want you to do that. So I don't love the idea of borrowing from a 401k, but you need to. I want you to get that mortgage caught up, and I want you to get a car that's not going to leave you stranded somewhere.
Right. Okay.
And then start, and then just, you know, nose to the grindstone, pay that money back as quickly as you can.
Okay. Well, I sure do appreciate everything you do.
Well, you're welcome, Mike. Let me know what happens, okay?
All right, I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Ray joins us on the line. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Elise. Happy Thanksgiving coming up Thursday.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Got any big plans?
Just going to go to Miami and visit my family.
Very nice. I hope it's a safe trip.
Yep, thank you. Hey, listen, I got a question about a mortgage. If you have a mortgage and you're, you know, down to like 13 years and, but you see, you know, like you talked earlier and I'm in that camp with a guy saying that the, mortgage, your home, probably won't, get back to normal in 15 years maybe.
Right.
And so do you keep on paying a principal or do you refinance it a 30 year and you go ahead and, take that extra money that may be like $600 and invest that into, something else?
Well, it depends how what lets you sleep at night, right? So the problem with going from 13, you have 13 years left, and you're going to add 17 years onto your mortgage is all the interest you're going to pay.
Right.
So what's the interest rate you're at right now?
4.25.
Here's what I'd rather you think about. I'd rather you take whatever you have left and try to refinance to a 10-year at about 3%.
Okay.
A few more lenders are doing 10-year loans. At 3%, you may end up paying exactly what you're paying now.
Okay.
But you're going to shave three more years off your loan.
All right. I didn't look at that option, but I was just concerning, am I paying principal on a asset that's not going anywhere? Or let's say we move in 5 or 10 years.
Well, let's say you move in 5 or 10 years. Now you have no mortgage.
Okay.
Or you have very little mortgage left.
Right.
So you're going to have lots of flexibility.
Okay.
So now you don't have to worry about property prices falling because you've got tons of equity.
Sounds good. I didn't even think of that option. And I'm glad I called, Elise, and you help a lot of us out here.
Oh, I'm so glad, Ray. And I have to tell you something. My sister just did that loan. She just did a 10-year. She also had a... She and my brother-in-law, honestly, I swear to God, they're going to get that loan paid off in 7 years. They went with a 10-year loan. At about 3 and 1/8.
Right.
And she's like, every dime she's saving, she's just turning around and prepaying just to get rid of it. She said, I just want to not have a mortgage on my house. Now, I just got another 15-year. I'm slightly over her, like 3 1/4. But, you know, I'll probably pay it off. I don't really care about paying it off or not paying it off. That doesn't let me sleep better or not sleep better at night. I love that I'm paying 3 1/4%, and all that extra money is available to just do whatever.
Yeah, these interest rates are amazing.
These interest rates are once in a lifetime. They've actually, it's truly once in a lifetime, Ray, because, of course, they've never existed before.
Right.
This is like the lowest they've ever been. And so when I, you know, I'm in no hurry to pay it off, but I wouldn't advise you getting a 30-year simply because you know you're not going to be there for 30 years.
Right, right. But I thank you so much, Elise, and enjoy that turkey you're cooking for those 25 people.
I will. I hope they enjoy it as well. The trick is to not overcook the breast meat. I hate dry breast meat. Even with great gravy on it, I hate that. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, Ray. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Richard joins us on the line from Brazelton. Hi, Richard.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All fine. I have a question for you about the advantages of a VA mortgage over an FHA mortgage, and also, can a VA mortgage be assumable by my children?
I believe that VA loans can be assumable by your children. I'm just not sure why you would want it to be.
Well, because of my age, if something happens to me.
Okay, or are they going to keep your house, or are they going to sell it? Because
no, if something happens to me, one of my kids will take it over.
So any loan, so if something happens to you and your children are going to inherit this property, they can all take over a conventional loan as well.
Okay.
Assumable is like with an FHA and you sell it to Sally down the street and assuming she qualifies, she can just take over your payments.
Okay.
But that's not really, you know, advantageous as much as it used to be. I mean, it might be, but they still have to qualify. And meanwhile, you have, I mean, if interest rates go up to like 11% and you have a 5% loan, that could be very valuable. But she still has to have enough cash to pay you the rest of the amount. So most people don't, and that's why these assumable mortgages don't really work that well.
Okay.
But for your kids,
the advantage of the VA over an FHA.
Well, the advantage of a VA loan, frankly, is that you can go zero down payment, but it's really, really expensive, and the interest rate is preset. The FHA loan is more flexible, and you pay. It's expensive because you've got mortgage insurance built into both of them. So the best thing to do is to get a conventional loan if you can afford it and if you have enough equity in the property.
Okay.
Now, with an FHA mortgage, they recently had a rule change where it used to be that you paid mortgage insurance over the whole life of the FHA loan, but that is no longer the case. But it's very expensive up front. So if you can do private mortgage insurance rather than FHA mortgage insurance, it's cheaper, and that's why it's cheaper to get a conventional loan than an FHA loan.
Okay. Now, are the VA rates competitive with the FHA rates?
I'm not sure where they are. They typically get preset. I'm not sure where they are at the moment. They tend to be a little bit more expensive,
uh-huh.
and they tend to have a little bit higher fees associated with it. So you can call your VA home loan centers.
Yes.
And they will walk you through the whole process and tell you a little bit about it and all the rest. Are you? I assume you're a veteran, correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I qualify because I got my certificate of eligibility already from the VA, so it should be no problem there. Thank you for the information. I do appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show, and happy Thanksgiving. It's 50 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. We're going to take a quick break for traffic, I don't know, weather, some news. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, I'm Elyse Glink. So I'll be filling in for Clark. It's Thanksgiving week, so that means our typical fill-in times, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're going to walk through the great deals and what's going on with stores on Wednesday for Black Friday. We'll be answering your questions and all kinds of other fun things going on. Let's see if I can do one more quick question. Gina joins us on the line from Canton. Gina, what can I do for you today?
I wanted to find out, my interest rate on my mortgage is 7.25%, but I owe a little less than $40,000. Do I just sit tight and keep paying, or can you even refinance with that small amount?
You really can't. It's very difficult to refinance for less than $50,000. I mean, you can shop it around and see. But
okay.
I just think it's going to be hard. How many years do you have left?
I couldn't even tell you because we refinanced right at the very beginning. So I would say probably 8, but we're really socking the money to it to get rid of it early.
Yeah, there's no point. You've already paid down most of the interest you're going to pay on this loan. So anything that you do on top of that, I mean, your net rate has probably already been about 3% anyway. So I don't think you should worry about it at all. Just keep paying. That loan's going to go away pretty darn quick, and you're going to be without a mortgage, which is going to be great. All right, folks, 57 minutes past the hour. The music's still playing. That means I have to go, but I'll be back Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday for Clark. We'll be talking turkey, talking Thanksgiving, Black Friday deals, and other deals of the day. We hope you'll call in with yours. I'm Elyse Glink. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you have a great week. And if we don't talk this week, have a very happy Thanksgiving. I'll be back next Sunday for a recap. And I hope you'll join me here on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.